Hello and welcome to Dvorak Horowitz Unplugged, an hour-long discussion of activity in the financial markets around the world, featuring columnist John C. Dvorak and money manager Andrew Horowitz. This conversation is casual and unrehearsed. Let's join John and Andrew now.
I'm John C. Dvorak.
And I'm Andrew Horowitz.
And here it is, the 20th of August.
Yeah, hoo-hoo. It's almost over. It's almost Labor Day. When do the kids go back to school up by you?
In many areas around here, they've already gone back to school. When I was a kid,
yeah. It
was always September 9th.
Right. It was after Labor Day.
Yeah.
And it was always signaled by the Jerry Lewis telethon. You knew when the Jerry Lewis telethon came on, after that, you're off to school.
Yeah, something like that.
Did you ever watch that?
Yeah. Of course.
He lived down here in North Miami.
Jerry Lewis?
Yeah. In his later stages of life.
I thought he was in Arizona.
Nope. He may have had more than one place, but he was in North Miami Beach in Aventura to be exact. And I met him one day at a film store back in the days when there was film. And I'm like, oh, hey, what a mean bastard.
this is true.
I was like, What happened to the guy, the nutty professor guy? What happened? What's going on there?
I don't know anyone who's ever met him that doesn't come back and say the same exact thing. In fact, I wrote a piece in the San Francisco Examiner in the 80s, and my editor is this kind of famous local guy, Roy Barron, who had met him at a – he was irked that I wrote today. It was kind of a semi-complimentary piece about Lewis. And he was, like, mad at me for writing. He said, the Lewis doesn't deserve anything like this. It's just like – he was an a-hole.
Yeah. Yep. Well, let's go over some of the things we're going to be talking about this evening. First of all, it was a wild week of swings last week, but we ended up on an up note for the week. The week was down about 1% overall, but it started climbing back towards the end there. And the question is whether it's a follow-through we're going to see or a fake-out on the downside. Banks are getting some love from the Volcker Rule relief. There was a deal passed today. Where nothing major, but they clarified a few things in terms of what banks could do with their own money for their proprietary trading. So that was kind of interesting. All eyes are going to be on the Jackson Hole economic confab. I call it the confab. At the end of this week, Thursday, I think it is, that the speakers from the U.S. will be yabba-dabba doing, talking about their stuff. You know, and as I say, it's here comes Mr. Know-It-All. Remember where that was from?
Who would that be?
That would be all of the Fed speakers. Any Fed speaker. They know. They know about the economy. They know what's right for you. They know what's best. Do you remember what show that was from, though?
Mr. Know-It-All?
Yeah.
Or the picture that you had, Rocky and Bullwinkle?
Yeah, it was from that show, Rocky and Bullwinkle.
Yeah.
That was the one. Good old days. Hey, Rocky. All right, and we're announcing tonight a new Close to the Pin, which...
Good, finally.
You're going to like this one because I think you're going to say, how come we never did that before? You'll see. It's kind of a good one. So, market update. We have some more easing. China Eurozone is talking about easing. China came out with some deal over the weekend. They're going to, again, it's all this tweaking process. Everything's tweaking. They're going to refine. They're going to just slightly update their process of... deciding how banks can lend out and what the rate is that they could utilize to lend out as to make it supposedly a little bit easier to understand and also to allow for more money to flow into the Chinese economy. So everybody was kind of excited about that for a couple of minutes. On Friday, last Friday, the markets all of a sudden took off. I mean, one of those straight shots up out of nowhere. What was it? Well, there's fiscal easing rumors, something we've talked about that can't be done or that hasn't been done in Europe. So Germany seems to be wanting to do some deficit spending, about $50 billion of deficit spending, upwards of that, to try to make sure that if, in fact, a recession is going to hit or an economic downturn further than they have already, that they're going to do something that is going to be akin to fiscal spending, fiscal easing.
Shouldn't they have already done this like years ago?
It would seem so.
kind of late to the game, just going to make things worse.
Yep. Stream. I'm getting the old hissing again.
You getting a hiss?
I'm not getting a hiss. The stream, the people on the stream say we're getting a little hiss.
Well, maybe it's just the stream that's getting a hiss because I'm not getting a hiss. Yeah, get a hiss on the recording?
I think no, not at all. I think it's probably just the input. You know, we input output into
probably have a ground loop on the stream.
Yeah, something. Let's see, what else do we have here? Trump is pushing for 100 basis point cut and a restart of quantitative easing.
He's doing anything to get to the 2020 election.
Everything he can. He's also talking today, hinting around of possibly a payroll tax cut.
Huh.
Yeah. I don't think that's going to happen. Do you?
Oh, I don't think so either. I think it did, but it's obvious that he's really worried sick because he knows more than we do that the economy is about borderline, especially after these crossovers with the bond market. Especially the first one that took place, which marks March of next year as the moment when we should go into recession.
And that would be bad timing.
It would be bad timing for him.
Yeah.
But I think he can put it off by diddling around like this.
I mean, if you have the constant carrot going out, you talk about payroll tax cuts, maybe capital gains cuts, talk about stimulus, blame it on the Fed, do whatever they can. I mean, people vote with their pocketbooks, right? Many people.
Well, yes. I think they always do, whether it's up or if it's down, they vote the next guy in. Heck with it. That's what happened to George H.W. Bush. He got voted out because it was in a mini recession took place just, I mean, besides throwing up on the Japanese prime minister, a mini recession was underway and Clinton snuck in there. And it's very rare that you get a one-term president like that unless there's economic reasons.
Yeah. But what's interesting is what I don't understand is how on one hand President Trump is talking and you know constantly still comparing himself with Obama and talking about how we have a strong economy, the strongest that there was. Our last president and our last administration had zero interest rates, weren't paying any interest on their bonds at all, which not exactly true. And then talk about how there was there's a need for a rate cut in QE now if the economy is so strong. It doesn't make any sense.
No. I think he likes to just assuage the public with the positivity about the economy, which is in good shape, but he knows that we have this problem, underlying problems that can result in a recession at the drop of a hat. And he's got to push to keep that from happening. I think this is the reason he's got this kind of two-faced approach to this, seems to me.
I think it's the same thing. It's all politics right now. Everything is politics to stay in power. I was thinking about that today. What is it? He just must love the power, which is great. I guess if you or I were in that position where we're getting, you know, carted around, private chefs, the head chief of the biggest economy in the world, I guess we'd want to hold on to that, right? It seems like it's something we'd like to do.
It seems like if you have the temperament for it, I think it's probably a good job. But you know, you have people like Biden. I'm now more every time this comes up, I'm more and more convinced that Biden hasn't got the right temperament for being president, and he doesn't want to be president. But they've kind of pushed him into the situation. And he's like leading the pack because nobody else is any good. And he's trying to submarine his own candidacy and he just can't pull it off.
So he can't make it or break it.
He doesn't know what to do. He can't get out of it. He's not even combing his hair.
Yeah. He can't even mess things up versus trying to get things done. So I saw that Elizabeth Warren moved up in the polls. What's that about? And why is she once again trying to dig up this whole Native America thing?
Well, the reason she moved up in the polls is because Kamala Harris is moving down in the polls and somebody's got to pick up the slack. It's her.
Ah. Yeah.
Pretty much. I think Kamala's out of it. I mean, after Tulsi Gabbard kind of ruined her in the last debates, and then now recently she's starting to make all sorts of weird claim. I mean, she's making weird tweets. She's ruining her own career now. Kamala's out, so Warren's up. Mm.
Well, let's talk about Europe for a second. The Bank of America came out with a piece recently that said that the expects the central bank in Europe, the Eurozone, to cut the deposit rates by 20 basis points and engage in small quantitative easing program lasting up to about a year for bond purchases worth about 30 billion euros per month, which is the reason we're seeing those bonds drive lower. The problem is when we did $50 billion of bonds per month here, when we were buying those, there was plenty of bonds to be bought. Our bond and our debt structure could handle that.
Yeah.
When Europe does 30 billion, which is, let's just, of euros, 30 billion euros, it's a much bigger buy. It's like us doing 150 billion, maybe. It's just tremendous. It's just tremendous. And that's why it's just dive. So they're buying everything regardless of the rate, the rating. And
yeah, they're throwing their money away.
Yeah. So we're talking about also the PBOC, the People's Bank of China, is changing their interest rate reform and doing some things there. And we're seeing that there's going to be these deals done there. And China is starting to do a lot of work to counteract these tariffs. And, oh, there was another thing floated today. Rick Scott floated the idea that we would use the money that came in from the tariffs to help with taxes paid for by consumers in some regard. So we're going to use this money and give it back to consumers somehow. Maybe in, I don't know what, there's no estate taxes, maybe a state tax refund?
I have no idea. This is reminding me of that stupid carbon tax up in Canada where they refund it all.
Right. It's what's insane about it is it's the consumers that are paying it, essentially. If you do that, who's going to help? It's just going to help the companies, I think. Because the companies will then pass it on to the consumers more, and then the consumers will get some kind of a, I don't know, it's very strange what's going on. It just seems like this, it seems like there's so much, it's so much crazy. That's what it is. It's so much crazy going on right now with regard to trying to prop up of an economy that everybody says is in good shape. Right? Everybody says, hey, it's all in great shape. Everything is wonderful. But yet there are plans coming out. It's almost like we're in crisis mode. Doesn't it feel like we're in crisis mode?
Well, somebody thinks that.
Right. That's what I'm saying. It feels like we're in crisis mode without a crisis. I don't get it. I don't understand.
It'll all shake out.
Yeah. If you want to know more about what I call the long fuse, I had a good 45-minute rant on this week's TDI Discipline Investor podcast. I put a link in the show notes for episode number 469 on DH Unplugged. And, of course, you can listen to No Agenda each and every Thursday and Sunday with Adam Curry and John C. Dvorak, 12 noon, a good 3 hours of just incredible mind-bending information, deconstruction of the news, politics, and all things out there. And Adam's doing, is he doing it daily now? Is he doing a daily, the new and revived and all new daily source code, but now it's called like Along with Adam or something?
No, he's doing a, he's experimenting with another podcast with a black guy he's gotten to know. And it's mostly the guy himself. He's got all these interesting takes on things. And but he did a daily source code just as an anniversary of the invention of podcasting. It was one shot as far as I can tell.
The one show I listened to had a guy on that sounded like he just was really connected to a level of either a crazy level of being connected, and then if he was, why is he talking about it, or a little bit insane.
Oh, that was probably the interview with Steve Pachenik, who is very connected.
Yes, that guy. That was who
it was.
Yeah,
he gets together with him every so often. He decided to record this one.
Mm. Yeah, that was not sure. That guy could talk.
He's a chatterbox.
Oh, he could talk. I listened to some of his stuff. I'm like, what? You know, a lot of stuff about Israel and Hamas and these crazy spy kind of espionage-y kind of things.
Yeah.
It's hard to follow. I find it hard to follow, but fascinating. Adam follows. Anyway, you can listen to Joe Agenda on Thursdays and Sundays and listen to the Disciplined Investor podcast. You're looking at the long fuse, which I called, they look at the impact of negative interest rates and how that plays out. So China's economics. Yeah, it's good stuff. You should listen to that one. It was a good episode.
I will.
Yeah, it was a good episode. Growth of China's industrial output slowed much more than expected, down to 4.8% in July from a year earlier. This is the slowest pace since February 2002. Expectations were for 5.8%. So things are definitely, that's where the hysteria should lie, is China. China. Lots of negative numbers coming out of there. You know how the tech companies were under fire and they were brought in front of Congress and they're talking about, like, you know, all the different things from social media to maybe monopolies to too much, too big, maybe breaking them up, that whole thing that's been kind of swirling around for a while?
Yes. Elizabeth Warren's one of the people behind that. Right,
break them up. Just 2 months before, lawmakers grilled executives from Amazon, Apple, Facebook, and Google at a hearing that was held as part of this broader antitrust probe. Some of Amazon's top executives made donations to the chair of the subcommittee leading the investigation.
Smart move.
How great is that?
Yeah.
Over a three-week
period. No corruption there.
Nope. Over a three-week period starting in late May, five senior executives from Amazon made individual contributions to Representative David Cicilline, the Democrat from Rhode Island, who is leading the House antitrust investigation into major tech companies. Now, let's see how much they gave. Executives, Jeff Wilk of CFO, this guy, general counsel even gave, and this guy. They did, they donated the $2,800 maximum allowed. Now, you would think that if he got those donations in, that they should probably recuse himself or give back the donations as they're going through these hearings. Wouldn't you think that?
Yeah. Well, I mean, he technically should recuse himself, seems to me.
Yeah, I don't think.
Or at least make the announcement that this happened.
Yeah. I mean, it's not a lot of money. We're talking about what?
No, it's not. It's peanuts for these guys.
Yeah, $15,000.
Yeah. It's more than nothing.
Right. It's a show that, hey, we will be, I mean, it's a wink, right? It's the old. Hey.
Yeah. It's like, here's $2,800. You can expect more in an envelope later.
Here's our down payment on this. That's exactly what it is. So I think it was pretty smart, but corruption at all levels, isn't it?
Yeah, kind of.
So what do you think about this really big, gigantic real estate deal that seems to be working in the background? The for sale sign that's not for sale. Maybe it's a hostile takeover of Greenland.
Yeah, yeah.
What is that
bomb
about?
Bomb Denmark and take Greenland.
What is that about? What's the point of this?
Well, the way we see it is the Chinese have been moving into Greenland to steal some of the resources or get resources. And they're going to, you know, do the same thing they do in Africa. They build roads and they do all these things as a favor to the country. And then, of course, the roads are just designed to get the mining material in and out of there easier. And then they build a port and then they just steal all the minerals and take them back to China. That's looks like what they may be up to. And so Trump got wind of this and he's trying to put a stop to it by buying the island.
Don't you think that Greenland saw that as very, I don't know, just it seemed like it was an insult.
It's not the first time the United States has tried to buy Greenland. There's two examples previous to Trump. One was in the 1800s, and then I think Truman tried to buy Greenland after World War II.
Just buying it? Well, it is an island, I guess, right?
You can buy it.
Yeah, it's an island. How much do you think it will cost? Do we have any ideas?
I don't know, but Denmark says they don't want to sell it, but there's no reason not to. They could use some money. I have no idea. I would say it would definitely be in the billions.
Yeah, what's a couple of billions? A few billion here or there. We could do it on layaway plan probably over a period of time. I mean, maybe somebody can mortgage it up. Get the banks together.
Well, Trump is not a guy who doesn't know how to do deals. So, land deals and real estate deals, and that's what this is.
That'd be kind of fascinating. What's on Greenland besides a big island?
Apparently, under all that snow, there's a ton of stuff.
Ton of natural resources.
Yeah.
Is there anything else?
Probably oil under there for all we know. Who knows? There's a lot of stuff there, and it's, you know, and if it's all going to melt like the global warmers say, well, it's up for grabs. You can put some resorts there.
Oh, there you go. Trump Greenland. Or maybe he'll rename it Trumpland. That's possible.
Good.
Yeah. So while all this is going on, and when we have this crazy political environment that's happening right now in terms of the election cycle and all that, and while we have people from Amazon trying to worm their way into better favor with the politicians, this cycle, it seems to be more politician news than I remember in a very, very long time. You know what I'm saying? Like, everything's somehow related to politics these days.
Like, I think the preoccupation with Trump has caused this problem.
Oh, is that what it is?
So now, what else could it be? It's the only variable that's changed.
That is the only variable. I mean, I look at Reuters. It's like Trump says this, Trump's doing that. The first five or six items every day on Reuters.
Yeah.
CNN.
More publicity for Trump. It seems to me they're doing, the media is doing the same thing they did to get Trump elected.
My wife comes to me just the other day, who has CNN on in her little, she has a little TV in the bathroom when she gets ready, and she has CNN on there. So I say, what are you? She says, I like to listen to the news. So she says to me the other day, she goes, I can't watch this anymore. I'm like, what's the matter? She says, all they do is talk about how much they hate Trump on CNN. They don't tell you, there's no national news at all, like a fire somewhere or traffic
anything.
Jam.
Anything, yeah.
It's all, I hate Trump.
The riots in Hong Kong, the riots in France, the riots here and there, they don't even cover. Bah, nuts.
Nothing.
What's it got? Unless Trump's got something to do with it, they don't want to talk about it.
It's crazy. It really is.
Yeah, your wife's right.
Yeah, it's become crazy. I mean, I like to watch multiple channels. I kind of flick around to different channels. But, it used to be that you kind of, okay, we'll have a little bit of politics on CNN, a few other things. And now it's just, they're also, they're just, all of them are just, especially when they have like the five or six guests on in a row, going one after the other after the other, and the headline on the bottom, Trump hates Jews now, or whatever, that whole thing that's going on now, that, he said something about, he said the word Jewish. He said, he didn't say anti-Semitic, he said anti-Jewish.
That means he hates Jews.
In one of his comments. Ugh, crazy. That's crazy. People are nuts. People are just nuts. And it's gotten to a point, as we know, and I'll end on this point, that you can't even talk about it, like, realistically with anybody. Because as soon as you mention something, people get a little crazy. Oh, you don't like him? Or you do like him? Oh, wait a minute. You like Trump? Oh, wait a minute. You don't like Trump? Oh, you're a Republican. It's enough. Let it go. There's more life than the politics, man. And with that in mind, something really interesting happened this week. There was a meeting of a group of 200 U.S. companies, the major companies, major corporate and publicly traded companies.
Yeah.
And you know how they've been very committed to the idea of increasing and maximizing shareholder equity, shareholder value. And they do this through higher stock prices, through dividends, through buybacks, all this kind of stuff that goes along with the idea that shareholder value is the most important thing when it comes to, the whole structure of markets.
Right.
And you could say that makes sense, because what you have is a company that has a stock. The stock is owned by the shareholders. So therefore, what you do is you want to make sure that the shareholders are well taken care of. That kind of makes sense. The owners of the company should be the ones that participate in the company's success. Well, in this meeting, which was, I think, led by Jamie Dimon from J.P. Morgan, they said that they're going to kind of change their long-term and long-held conviction. And in this business roundtable, they said that now moving away from this main purpose of maximizing shareholder value, they're going to be committed to delivering value to their customers and investing in employees in ways that go beyond financial compensation, to include training and education ensure their skills are kept up to date, and embracing diversification and inclusion, dignity, and respect.
What?
Yeah. That's their new line. I'm going to read it again because it's important. Investing in employees in ways that go beyond financial compensation to include training and education to ensure their skills are kept up to date and embrace diversity and inclusion, dignity, and respect. As opposed to shareholder value. They're also committed to dealing with fairly and ethically with the supply chain, supporting the communities in which they operate, and generating long-term value for shareholders who provide the capital companies need to grow. So, but this is all the way down on the list is the long-term value for shareholders. So they're going to obviously be against any kind of labor that doesn't meet the standards of good practice. So sweatshops, child labor, forced labor, slave labor, those kind of things, which shouldn't be allowed. They're going to make sure to put that higher on the list of things they're going to watch. What else is it now? Delivering value to their customers, which, by the way, as a customer in general, would be nice. Customer service.
Don't they have to do that just routinely just to keep their customers anyway? Why would they have to elucidate that?
Well, because I think customer service has gone to the shitter in the last
10
years.
It's because they've outsourced most of it to India. They don't care.
They've either outsourced it or they botted it or they've phone treated.
Yeah, phone trees. There you go.
I got something from Schwab the other day. We do business with Schwab, one of the companies we do work with. And they restructured their entire customer service team. It's a whole big thing. And they send us this letter, and they send us a link that they want us to come on to one of these webinars. And they're discussing how it's going to be much better now because instead of dialing one number and you get my team, a specific team that I work with, I can have now this phone tree system that I have to know what I'm dealing with to push the right buttons in order to get to the right place. I'm like, well, how does that work? And now instead of having a dedicated team, I have a decentralized process of customer service where I have to figure out where I want to go into, what area that specializes in maybe retirement planning or estate planning or accounts.
Well, this sounds like a disaster.
I think what they're trying to do is push you into not utilizing that process of phone, but utilizing the secure message system where you type the information in and give them all the information about what you're looking for and then also tag what team it could be, who's responsible. So if it's an address change, you put, you know, upload the form and you find where it says customer service, account services, and then you upload the form. It goes right to them and it's done, as opposed to wasting their time on the phone, I suppose. I don't know. But that's what it's come to. There's no customer service.
Self-service, yeah.
It's what it is. It's self-service.
Yeah, self-service with the benefits of it being a lot cheaper.
Right. And they're going to invest in employees in ways that go beyond financial compensation,
sounds to me as though they don't want to give them a raise.
Right, no raise, but we're going to give you 2 bicycles to work with.
Free seminars. Webinars.
Right. We're going to give you
given
access
by a robot.
Online robotic webinars.
Yeah.
And to keep their skills up to date, which I guess is kind of important, but I would think that was going on in the background anyway. If you're not keeping your employees' skills up to date, what good are they to you? And then
there is that.
And then the embracing diversity and inclusion, dignity and respect. What does that mean?
It means that they've just put something on paper that they can flash in somebody's face when they say we're going to boycott you for being women haters.
Or is this targeted
virtue signaling?
Is that it, or is it also targeting the millennials?
The millennials all go for all kinds of crazy things. So they might be, if you want to get millennials, you have to have a statement.
Yeah, I have to.
I mean, one of the marketing rules about millennials is they fall for a story. So you can't sell them a product unless there's a story behind it.
Right. So
you see all these little dipshit little products that are all, you know, small batch bull crap products that have a story behind it, which reminds me of the olden days. You used to have stories behind some of these stupid little restaurant chains. I remember when Carlos McMurphy's, it was a Mexican chain that was, it was a story about Carlos, who's a, you know, Mexican Irish guy. And then he'd go on with this bull crap story of this made up character. And that's come back full circle. Now the millennials demand these stories about their, about the products they buy. I'll pay an extra buck because there's a story.
That's like the, when I got into the business of financial planning and investments in the beginning, I remember back in the 80s, it was all about the story. You tell the story. So, you know, I had a guy, I remember, that was selling me a stock, and it was all about, let me take 10 minutes or 5 minutes and tell you about this company. Blah, 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 this whole thing. I'm like, well, the company's down 75% this year to date. But they have this product and what's going on. And they really, it's not about the price of the stock. It's about the product they have coming, you know, this whole thing. It's like, oh, okay. And you would tell this story all the time.
Yeah.
That's the domain of the newsletter writer too, right?
Kind of.
Yeah. You know, you tell these long-winded stories about some shares of a company, about how you've seen that they have an undiscovered mine, or they have some kind of the team is working in the background. That's like that company, Magic Leap. Remember that company?
Yeah, vaguely.
They were coming out with I think AI and also what's the word I'm looking for? Virtual reality. You know, they'd have these kind of things, the last five years, they're secretive, and they took over the IBM campus up in Boca Raton, or not in Boca Raton, in Sunrise, Motorola campus in Sunrise. They took over, and you know, they got all these cars and all these people working for them, but not one prototype, not one commercial, not one piece of information I've ever seen about this. It's just a lot of these really vague videos. So we're gonna have diversity. I think our podcast, that's a new thing for our podcast. We're going to embrace diversity and inclusion, dignity, and respect.
I think those are the big four for us.
Yeah, that's big. Now what's, we don't have dignity or respect in Hong Kong. Protests continued over the weekend. I thought those umbrella pictures were really cool. Did you see all those pictures with all the umbrellas?
Yeah. Well, they've come up with all kinds of cool techniques to, fend off, projectiles and things like that. And umbrellas, you can't identify anybody under the umbrella because you can't see them.
Right. I thought it was at first because of the rain, to be honest with you. Then I looked further into it. I'm like, wow, there's a lot of umbrellas. Then all I did was want to be an umbrella salesperson in Hong Kong. Then I realized there's something else to this. So it turns out that they're using these umbrellas as a shield for pepper spray. If there's any kind of spray that's going on, crowd control, they can just put up their umbrellas and guard themselves against pepper spray so that tear gas canisters don't hit them. And they carry around water bottles to use when the tear gas canisters drop, they can extinguish them.
Yeah.
So this isn't just your average protest where people are just coming out, and this is planned.
They've got a lot of techniques. It's actually, the tear gas thing's more elaborate than what you said. They have these, these traffic cones, and when a tear gas canister is rolling around, they put the traffic cone over it.
Oh.
And then pour the water into the top of the traffic cone and then stuff a towel in there and it just let it sit in there till it goes out. It's very, very structured.
Is it like a training course for doing the right protest or something going on?
I think once a few people start doing stuff, everyone just uses it to see it. And you go, oh, that's a great idea. And then you just do it yourself. I don't think there's much more to it than that.
I like it. One of the things we've been harping on for a long time is the whole idea of vaping, this whole outbreak of vaping versus smoking. And I've always thought that it just somehow it doesn't seem healthy to me.
Well, none of that stuff seems healthy. If you're going to just either smoke or water vapor, chemically charged water vapor. I mean, none of this sounds like a good idea.
But the people who have been utilizing this thought it was healthier than smoking. Right?
Mm-hmm.
So the CDC is working with with health departments in a number of states, Wisconsin, Illinois, California, Indiana, Minnesota. Since the 20th of June, these states have reported 94 possible cases of severe lung illness tied to vaping.
Yeah.
In teenagers and young adults. Of those, 30 occurred in Wisconsin. Mm. These patients experienced coughing, shortness of breath, and fatigue. Some had some difficulty breathing and required ventilation. So I don't know if there was maybe a bad batch of I don't know what.
Yeah, I would think there's something like that going on because these are the chemicals that are used that people vape. It's pretty uncontrolled. It's kind of a wild west of like, oh, let's put some of this in here.
Yep. You need the pure stuff. You need the pure tobacco cigarettes, unfiltered. Disney, did you follow this recent story as of yesterday with this whole whistleblower?
Tell me it doesn't sound like money laundering.
Some of these things that they did seem pretty, I would say, easy to do. Like the idea of someone buying a gift card, booking it as revenue, and then we spend it at the park, you book it as revenue.
Yeah.
Or buying a gift card at a discount, let's say a $500 gift card for a discount of $375 and then booking the revenue at $500.
Yeah.
Giving a gift card to somebody for free because maybe they fell at the park. Here's a $2,000 gift card, booking it as profit when they use it.
Yeah.
So there's a whole bunch of things like that. Gift cards are a big part of it. Also, free golf when maybe it's part of a package when they go to the golf and they utilize that because they have a coupon or a ticket as part of maybe a weekend package that's included with park passes and a hotel, booking that as profit. So there's all sorts of things in this parks and resorts business segment of Disney that's being the whistle's being blown on.
And I don't know if you're going to get to the bottom of it, but it reminds me of the way money laundering works in restaurants.
Yeah.
You know, you get a restaurant. My wife used to work at a place when she was younger, and she claims it was a money laundering operation because of the way they did business. And then she's seen other places like it. And we went to one once. Go to this place, and it's like, hey, you know, you go in there, and, hey, they comp you this, they comp you that, they comp you this, they comp you that. You don't even spend any money in there. Great restaurant. And you don't get to see any of the what the books are they racking up? Are they making it look like they're charging money and they're not? That's what apparently you just do a lot of comps and then run it as real numbers on the books, and that's how you do your money laundering. You bring some drug money in. I don't know what they're up to, but it's very suspicious.
I mean, obviously Disney is denying this. And this is a whistleblower tip from someone who used to work there. And obviously what they're saying is, oh, this is an employee that we fired because they did this and that. And they were also, you know, making trouble for people at the office for years. Well, if in fact this is true, and if in fact she's been talking about this for a long time, she obviously made some trouble for people. So, I don't know. We'll see how this goes. But they're talking about possibly in excess of $6 billion worth of excess revenue that was reported.
Yeah.
Yep, lots of money.
Just saying.
Yep. And speaking about retail and retail, these big box stores are just getting their asses kicked. And I was wondering, is sentiment so bad that it may be a buying opportunity? Or is this the final bell for these companies?
I don't know. You know, we go to Home Depot a lot.
Home Depot actually had earnings. They were one of the good ones. Home Depot's doing well. They came out with earnings this morning. Second quarter same store sales grew through 3.1%. Even though they missed on their revenue, and there was some discussion about cooler temperatures earlier in the summer that impacted seasonal items, Their gross margin declined a little bit, which isn't so good, but it was just around the estimate area. Stock was up about 4% today. It did, in fact, lower its sales forecast also from 3.3% to 2.3% on the comp stores.
Another big box store we like is Costco.
I wonder how Costco's doing this year. Those are more like the discount warehouse. Well, not Home Depot, I guess. Let me give you these numbers. Macy's down 47% this year.
Is Macy's to you a big box store?
It's a big box retailer. It's a mall based retailer.
Okay, that's what I would never categorize. I just categorize it as a retailer.
So what do you think? What are you thinking? Like Home Depot, Walmart, Costco, BJ's, Sam's. Those are kind of the. That's what you're thinking. Big box?
Food Max. These giant stores, these big boxes. They look like, when I think big box store, I think they're a big box. They're like a giant box, not like a Macy's, which is really, I mean, they're in a mall here and there, but their main store is in New York. It's not a mall like store. It's its own city block. And there are other old fashioned Macy's that are here and there in the cities.
Well, let's call it Macy's.
I think it's a mall shop or something. I don't consider Macy's a big box store. It just doesn't fit my definition.
How about chain retail? Is that a better definition? Better way to look at it?
Yeah.
So you got Dillard's down 6%, one of the better ones this year. Kohl's down 30%, JCPenney down 40%, GameStop down 78%, Foot Locker down 20%.
Now, GameStop is another good example of anything, but it's not a big box store. It's not even a big store.
All right, so it's I'm sorry I said big box.
I said it.
I'm sorry.
I'm not asking for an apology.
It says chain retail. Retail chains.
Okay. Yeah. Retail chains, yeah. I'd say.
Foot Locker down 26%, Gap down 36%, and Urban Outfitters down 36%. The list goes on. The only one that's doing really well this year somehow is Zumiez.
Well, have you ever been to one of these? I mean, I go to this, I see these shops, and if they're in the old-fashioned malls that are being deserted left and right, you go in there and I was just in some place recently with my daughter and we're wandering around. I said, I don't know how these people, I'd have to think of what it was. But it was a famous place. And I went in there and I came out thinking, how are these guys still in business? Yeah. There's nobody in this place. It's just like empty.
Right, exactly. When I go to Macy's, there's nobody in there. You know, I usually go to Dillard's, to be honest with you. But still, Dillard's is like this one old crotchety guy in the men's department, you know? Yeah. And he's selling stuff. And I said, listen, I want to buy this shirt here. Okay, thank you. I said, I'm going to go over to the socks area. I'm going to buy some socks. Whoa, let me take you there. I'm like, why? I could walk just fine. But he wants to get the commission on it or the...
Yeah, they're working on a commission.
Or whatever the deal is, you know, the credit. So, but like a Foot Locker, you could get all that stuff very easily. And I mean, it used to be, I don't want to try on the shoes and then I got to return them. Get 4 or 5 different pairs from Amazon or from any of these other shoe companies that are online and just return them for free when they don't fit. It takes 2 seconds.
You know, I've never adopted that because it just seems to me it's a pain in the ass to repackage, and I hate doing that. I'd rather go to some store and try on shoes personally.
Okay, but I haven't had a problem. And when I like a particular shoe, what I do is I buy 3 or 4 of them and just stick them in my closet. I have them for the next couple of years.
Wow.
Yep.
You and Faith Popcorn.
I just broke out a new pair in a different color of these New Balance sneakers that I started wearing for my South Africa trip. The other pair I wore, I don't know, they don't wear out.
Using
so
them as walking shoes?
Yeah, walking shoes, you know, just weekend shoes. Very comfortable. Let's see, so Home Depot earnings came out. I told you about that. Okay, a couple of things. So we got a close to the pin that I mentioned. And of course we have donations that we're requesting. And just want to let you know that one of the things that we have with regards to our listeners is an important policy that you need to know about. And that's the whole idea of diversity, inclusion, dignity, and respect. And for that, we think that we're really appealing to your kind and good nature to provide for our dignity and the respect, the respect that you should show us in return. And the way to do that is go over to DH Unplugged. And there's a little button there you can click on and just donate away, whether you want to do it one time, you want to give $100, $500, or if you want to just do it monthly, you know, $25 a month. Think about the amount of time and the amount of the good information that you get and insight on a weekly basis. Yeah. So you can do that. The other thing I'll mention is we have this close to the pin. And I thought what we would do is we would do it on... I spelled it totally incorrectly. I have to change this on the site. Do you see that?
No.
I said the SPDR golf ETF. It's not golf. It's gold. There's a D missing. We're gonna see gold. We're gonna look at gold.
Well, gold's on the upswing.
Yeah, but we never did this before.
Never did what? Take an ETF?
A gold ETF. Gold GLD. The gold.
Yeah, that's the one. That's the classic.
Yeah. So we're gonna have a close to the pin. The opportunity to put your price guess in has now begun. You go over DH Unplugged on the top right there. It says close to the pin. Click on it and just put in your price guess for the close. I think it's on, you have to put it in by the 20, I'll tell you the date, the 30th. You have until the 30th to guess the price of gold. And whatever the price closes on September 6th, whoever is the closest will win a DH Unplugged t-shirt and get the honor of being able to be in the DH cup, DH Close to the Pin Cup.
Yeah, the Invitational.
At the end of the year. So that should be a fun one. So you need to send me your price.
You know, we should. What do you think about this idea?
Yeah.
Instead of just having the 12 guys in the Invitational, have it for the last 2 years.
We could do that. We have the names.
Make it a little more competitive.
We have the emails. Or for that matter, everybody that we had in the past for every cup.
We could do that. Once you're in, you're in.
Yeah, once you win, you're in, you have the opportunity to go again. Yeah. All right. That's what we're going to do. Makes my job a little bit tougher, but we could do that.
Adding more work for you.
Yeah, we could do that.
Easy for me.
Yeah, very easy for you. Let's come up with ideas.
There you go.
Dvorak idea, Horowitz execute. All right, what else do we got here? We got some really weird stuff. I don't know where I want to go first on this. Okay, let's talk about Facebook. First of all, let me get this out. Personally, I'm fed up with Facebook. I'm halfway fed up with Twitter too, by the way. I think what I need to do is flush my current stream and follow different people. Have you ever done
that? That's an interesting idea.
I'm so sick of the same stuff. I got this one guy that can't.
It's not that easy to flush the whole stream, though.
Yeah, you know, I got to unfollow. Unfollow the people that put this. Like this one guy that puts GIFs up all the time.
GIFs.
Every response to everything that happens, he puts
one
up.
That's me. What are you talking about?
No, but seriously, he's so annoying. And there's some other guys that. And then you got the backslap crew, which these guys that all love each other, you know, and they just nothing. I don't know. It just seems to me to be I'm heavy on the same information. I want to do a change up. I'm going to look into that. But Facebook, I'm totally sick of. I'm sick of it because I'm more concerned not for me, and I don't use it that often. I'm concerned about their overt and just absolute use of data and the constant stories and what they've done, which we knew they did for a long time, but they're all coming out. And their misuse of information by people. And on top of that, the potential for Facebook to have very significant impact on society with really bad misinformation campaigns. Now, I'm just saying. It's going on a long time, but I'm tired.
I've been a Facebook member, so.
Oh, you never even had an account?
I've never had an account. There's a bogus account on there that says has my name, but it's not me. I've never liked the idea of Facebook. I thought it was dumb. It was like an AOL kind of thing for people that, you know, didn't have the wherewithal. Just if they wanted to put a bunch of stuff up for their friends and family, why don't they just go to WordPress.com and and have complete control. It's never made any sense to me.
Well, they're going to be unveiling a new privacy feature, which users that are going to be able to clear their activity could have some impact on their business. This was an announcement today. So they said if you clear off Facebook activity, they're going to remove your identifying information from the data that apps and websites choose to send us. We won't know which websites you visited or what you did there, and we won't use any of the data you disconnect to target ads to you on Facebook, Instagram, or Messenger. They said, we expect this could have some impact on our business, but we believe giving people control over their data is more important, which is the first time I've really heard that from Facebook. So things must be really going bad.
I don't know. I guess so. I still see people looking onto Facebook pages constantly, 24/7, walking around like zombies.
Well, when I was in South Africa, you just see the thumbs. See the thumbs moving all the time, right? That thumb move.
Oh yeah, the thumbs.
You know what I'm talking about? The thumb just kind of like swiping. Yeah. It's like, what are you swiping? I mean, what's so fascinating here? A couple other things. It's kind of a creepy story. I don't know if it's, I've looked this up and I tried to cross-reference this several times and I keep getting the same answer. So I don't know if this is an internet spoof or if it's real. The question came up, what was the original idea behind the creation of Kellogg's Corn Flakes?
Yeah.
So it seems that Mr. Kellogg, the man who created Corn Flakes, produced the cereal in the 19th century and marketed it as a health, ready-to-eat, anti-masturbation morning meal.
Well, you know the guy was nuts, right? There was a movie done about him.
Yeah, there was some weird movie. He was a Seventh-day Adventist who worked as a physician who staunchly believed in celibacy and that sex was unhealthy and immoral. Yeah. And he was such a firm believer that it was damaging. The sex was a problem to the mind and body that he slept in a separate room from his wife and never consummated his marriage, choosing instead to adopt their children. He felt, though, that by having this cereal, somehow it was healthy for you and it would stop you from, by having healthy foods and all that, and having something like this to eat in the morning would stop these ideas coming to your head that would somehow make you desirous of masturbating. I don't know.
It's probably a true story.
Yeah, it's very, very weird.
Kellogg's Corn Flakes.
Yep. And maybe Katy Perry should be starting to have a bowl of Corn Flakes in the morning, I was thinking, because she was just recently once again accused of sexual misconduct.
Yes, I heard this story, and I believe, and if you can't quite penetrate what she must be like in person, but she might be one of those goofball girls who do things like this.
I guess she was intoxicated, and Russian journalist Tina Kandelsky said that she tried to kiss her without her consent. During a conversation with Russian media outlet StarHit, she claimed that the singer attempted to force herself before fighting her off. You know, that was something I was thinking about. The whole kiss thing, right? So that awkward first kiss concept, where you're not quite sure if the person you're out with wants to or not, but you kind of get closer, you make the thing, and it's somehow, it's like a magnet, you know, where all of a sudden it snaps together, right? Do you have to, like, ask people now, like, can I kiss you?
Not if you're a teenager, but if you're an adult, you probably do.
Yeah, can I kiss you? I'd like to kiss you.
Would it be okay?
It's okay if I kiss
you. Well, maybe, for just a minute.
Yeah, and if she says no, you got to go right to the cornflakes.
A good one.
Right to the cornflakes.
The Katy Perry story that I like better is the one where she's began at some hanging around, but she pulled some guy's pants down.
Oh.
In public.
Ah.
And, you know, completely. I mean, apparently she grabbed his pants and pulled him down as a joke, and it got caught his underwear and the whole, boom, naked.
Oh, really?
You know, from the waist down. And he's suing her.
Oh, what happened? I mean, I guess kids are going to start suing people for, like, wedgies now.
Well, you know, it's probably suable. Yeah. The lawyers have come up with some new gimmicks.
Yeah. Well, let's move over to the next stage here. This is a game that we play. It's not a solicitation to buy or sell any security. It's not a recommendation of any kind. Nothing on the show should be considered investment advice or a recommendation. If you choose to invest in any of the stocks mentioned, you should know that it may carry risk, along with the risk of a loss of principal. You should also seek out professional financial advice for your particular situation. We assume no risk, as these are not to be considered recommendations. Horowitz Company, myself, or John C. Dvorak may invest in any of the securities mentioned, and we'll disclose that on the website under the weekly stock picks section. You can go to dhunplugged.com and see all the names we discuss in the segment, along with the performance information from the date discussed, as well as any additional important disclosures.
Yep.
So things are looking good. A few things were kicked off last week. Only one. I was really surprised about this one because it was in the money for a bit there. It came back. I should have probably put a bigger stop on it because it is a triple. It's the triple NASDAQ.
Yeah, Pro Shares Ultra Pro was QQQ.
Yeah, that was stupid. That was very stupid. Should have put a well, – I wasn't thinking. That's only
you
three.
You also have one here marked as mine that I don't believe is mine.
Which one?
Which is the Global X Fund – Argentina ETF. That's absolutely yours.
Last week we talked about Argentina. I said it was down 48%. I gave you the name of this.
Oh, you're right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I chose it as a spur of the moment pick, which is another good example of why you shouldn't do that.
Right. You're up a little bit.
I'll stay with it.
You're up a little bit on it. You're down 4.5%. 22% up on Church and Dwight. Kinder Morton up 5.5%. The Aerojet Rocketdyne Holdings up 51.63%.
Right, since April.
Oh, that's a beauty. That was a chart
that's
action.
That's the pick of the year.
That was unbelievable.
And it's hanging in there.
Yep. MGM Resorts up 2.5%, which is kind of interesting considering some of the Hong Kong related companies like Wynn. There's a couple of other, like Wyndham Resorts, a couple other hotel chains have been hurt because of this. I actually bought one of the hotel chains for our managed growth strategy because we felt that there's nothing really wrong with the company. They did really well on earnings. And if, in fact, this Hong Kong stuff, if ever resolves, we may see a nice pop in it. Because it came down very sharply after that.
Maybe a while.
Rise. Yeah. Netflix, the short is up 18.3%.
Yep. That's yours.
Yep. Dish up 1%. I have one stock for this week. It's something we've never talked about, and that is Planet Fitness. Now, why?
You're shorting it.
I'm shorting it. The reason is, and actually shorted this in real life today before the show. Actually, this chart droop. If you look at the chart, especially on a weekly, there's no support based on our technical indicators. A blow here for another like 5 points. And, you know, the stock's been doing really well. It got that nice kind of, not a blow off top, but a nice real directional move to the upside. And then it started rolling over daily right now. We're in a gap zone. So I think there's some opportunity for the downside. If markets just scream higher, everything goes along. But if markets at least don't do anything, I think it's a good opportunity.
Maybe. I'm going to go the opposite direction. I'm not in the mood for shorting yet.
Okay.
I'm going to take Symantec based only on insiders.
SYMC.
I think.
Where are you here?
I think that's what it is.
Yeah, that's what it is.
It is, I believe, there's one guy that's been buying it up. He's a director. He's been buying and buying. Normally, he's been selling his Brinks stock by the ton. And buying Symantec on the recent downturn of Symantec, this chart is really weird. And I believe that Symantec's got something going on that's going to come out.
I'll tell you. July 15th, Symantec and Broadcom have halted their discussions for a proposed merger as the two sides couldn't agree on a price. So maybe this is being somehow rejuvenated.
Maybe. My thinking is different, though. I mean, I agree with that 100%. But I'm also thinking that because of what happened in Texas with all these small towns ravaged by ransom.
Terrible.
I think Symantec's got something up its sleeve regarding, because it's always done. You remember when years ago you'd watch Symantec stock and there'd be some sort of a cyber attack on, you know, mm-hmm. some crazy thing going, that stock would skyrocket. And then it would just finally come back down to earth, and it would skyrocket again because there was another virus or some crazy thing that was going on. Yeah, or usually an attack, usually a cyber attack of some sort. And I think that this ransomware thing is just the tip of the iceberg of the problem. And I think Symantec may have a solution. I'm just guessing.
Yeah, it's possible. I'm not going to mention any names or give you any identifying information on this, but I was recently, I know somebody that, whatever, okay, big company. Out of nowhere, they get a ransom attack or a, you know, the attack where they lock down a bunch of their servers.
Yeah.
And what they're doing is now they're attacking the companies that provide the service. So, for example, as opposed to targeting, let's say, a site directly, they're going after DreamHost. And they're just locking down the entire structure somehow of these shared servers.
Ouch.
So everybody on that shared server is screwed.
Every site. That would be true, yes.
So,
well, they got to put a stop to this. Somebody's got to catch these guys, Bulgarians. I believe they're probably from Eastern Europe. Maybe Americans. Who knows? In fact, after today's, I was reading about the Texas thing. I immediately got cranked up my Acronis software and did a disk mirror. It's great. They have a clone disk function. I just cloned my whole hard drive from my main computer onto another drive. And I'm going to probably do that once every couple of weeks.
Yep.
Most I could lose is 2 weeks worth of work, but I'm not, you know, what's that mean?
Yep, exactly. All right, we're going to end it here. Go over to DH Unplugged, check out all the good things that are there on the offer, from the donation button, which will make you feel really good, happy, and elated all at the same time, to the weekly stock picks, and of course, get your price target in for the closest to the pin for GLD. So until next week. I'll see you.
Adios. Yep. See ya. Bye.
You've been listening in on a conversation with John C. Dvorak and Andrew Horowitz. Hope to be with you again soon. Bye-bye.
Now, I'm not broke, but badly bent. I'm not down to my last cent, because I got a dollar, but it's my last dollar bill. Yes, sir. In my pockets, there's a dent. All my dough is nearly spent, but I got a dollar, and it's my last dollar bill. Oh, I'd love just one more buck fortune left me by chance. Now, here's a hint, I feel like a mint. You can hardly tell by a glance. I don't care, no millionaire can give me the icy stare, cause I got a dollar, my last dollar bill.